Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody on this Tuesday following Christmas, not yet to New Year's. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy New Year soon.
Merry Christmas. Happy. We'll actually talk to them again before New Year's.
That's right. We're going to have another episode for you guys on Friday talking about this upcoming game. But first, it's the obituary from last week.
Yeah, that is the best way you have ever put it. James, I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm a little upset.
What's that?
I'm upset with you.
Why is that?
This was the first time you did not ask me how I'm doing.
Cody, how are you today?
I am doing just peachy. You know what? The Steelers have forced me to become an alcoholic. That is a joke, but I am gonna drink tonight on this podcast because I just can't handle it. Listen, I got my terrible towel wrapped around my head, my hood up, and I'm just hiding away. I'm a Steelers fan hiding away right now because I am just insanely embarrassed. To say
just
the
promise
least.
Me you're not gonna start doing the bag head thing the Lions fans.
No, it'll never be that bad. It'll never.
Pray to God it won't be that bad anyway. Trending in the wrong direction. Currently.
I gotta knock on wood. I might have just set ourselves up.
Yeah, don't do that.
Listen, all of us are looking forward to the future of potentially a draft pick the same way that my dog was just looking outside of the snow. We're waiting for a new quarterback. Not because Ben's bad. Actually, we're waiting for an offensive line too. Let's be real.
Yeah, and a few other things. I think some middle linebackers and corners.
Yeah. Offensive coordinator. Offensive line coach.
Yeah, line coach would be nice. Yeah.
This is, and I have to say this, for all my fans, for all the Steelers fans out there that are like me and are millennials, we grew up spoiled rotten. Yes. And I need to get that out of the way right now because I understand that and I respect it. I respect that I didn't have to sit through the quarterbacks that you did. I wasn't horrible. I wasn't fantastic growing up watching Tommy Maddox and Cordell Stewart. Cordell Stewart was crazy, man. However, yeah. I was only a Steelers fan for a short time before Ben Roethlisberger was drafted, and then I got spoiled. And not in the sense that, I mean, obviously, he's only been won two Super Bowls. The last 10 years have been rough, but we've also still gotten to watch really, really, really good football up until this year.
Yeah, and there's been aspects of the team that even through the struggles and a lot of mediocrity around the team, there has been aspects of excellence on the team. If there wasn't, you wouldn't have Ben Roethlisberger breaking all these career records. You wouldn't have the Steelers defense having the sack title 4 years in a row with the possibility of still getting it again this year. They're in the hunt. They're up and they're in that top five in the NFL, I think. So with two strong performances, they could still end up winning it for a fifth straight year. There's some really good performances that are going on within it, but I feel like this Steelers team right now has a very high variance between the degree of talent at different positions. Like, you have such extreme excellence with TJ Watt and Cam Hayward and even Minka Fitzpatrick. And then you have other positions where, like, we don't even have a center that most teams would want as a backup, let alone a starter.
Nope.
And then middle linebacker isn't too far behind that, you know? So there's such a huge variance at different positions right now. And I think that's where the big struggles are coming from. And that's why I try to temper my anger at how poor the performance is sometimes, because I see that there are areas that we do have, like, the best outside linebacker in the entire NFL. He's on our team. Like, he wins games for us single-handedly sometimes.
He does. He does.
We have who most people think is the second best defensive tackle in the entire NFL, and Cam Hayward. Like, he continuously gets first team all pro votes because of the fact that he is that good.
We have a top 10 safety. Top 10, I mean, easily,
yeah,
still.
Yeah. And Minka has had some first team all pros, multiple Pro Bowls already in his short career. And you know, there's some serious talent going on. But there is some serious lack of talent at other areas, and that's what's really killing Pittsburgh right now. There's a lot to talk about from before the game and covering the game. We're going to get this knocked out and try not to keep you too late on this one, because nobody wants to be depressed for an entire hour-long show.
No.
So we're going to try and keep it upbeat a little bit here for you and get to some of the pregame news first. So the first bit of good news before the game was Montrevious Adams coming off the COVID list.
That was big.
Which we really needed because we kept on giving up 200-plus yards rushing. So getting a a better quality nose tackle in the game is always a good idea.
Yep.
And then that was shortly then followed up by the bad news of some guys who were not going to be able to play in the game. Cody, do you have that list in front of you by chance?
I do, right here. No, just kidding. Chris Wormley, Pat Freiermuth.
You could pull it from there.
Yeah, Chris Wormley, Pat Freiermuth, Buddy Johnson, and Presley Harvin III were all listed as, or not playing this game. And obviously we found out later on that Presley Harvin III, the reason he did not play was because of the passing of his father on Christmas morning, which is just the absolute worst. And our prayers and thoughts and anything you can think of go out to him and his family. That's just a horrible, horrible thing to deal with on such a day that's supposed to be filled with so much joy and happiness and love and everything. So it's really, really sad for sure.
If he does get a chance to punt again this year for Pittsburgh, which I don't know if he will or not, but if he does, I would highly encourage fans to cheer him regardless of how he performs, because the young man's been through enough right now. And sometimes people just need to know that they've got your back no matter what. I always think back to when Penn State was going through their struggles with a field goal kicker by the name of Sam Ficken. And Sam was just absolutely awful early in his career as a field goal kicker and was missing most kicks. This is when Penn State did not have all the scholarships they normally had, so they couldn't just go steal a soccer player and give him a full ride. So it was Sam or nothing. The student section actually rallied behind him and decided to cheer him no matter what. So he missed a field goal, they cheered him. He actually turned it around, and by the time his senior year came around, I think he only missed like one or two field goals the entire season. And I think is actually on an NFL roster now, too. So I would highly encourage the Steeler fans to take a note out of the Penn State fans' notebook there and support him and see if we can't help him just turn it around by just showing him that we love him and support him, even if he's struggling. Just a little support on what he's going through as a human being, you know?
Yeah. I think that would go a long way. And I think that would even build up, you know, build up his confidence again and build up his, just his happiness even to be playing poorly and still have fans that got your back and are still celebrating you and being happy that you're on their team, goes a long way. And that's coming from, someone who may not have the best experience with that, but me myself putting myself in that shoes of like doing something bad and then still having people like, hey, we're here for you, like let's go, that's huge. I've had that in other areas of life, not necessarily sports, to be specific, but that would be
absolutely... You're never bad, right? You never had a bad day.
No, never had a bad day because I never touched Cody the Tanner. Field. Just kidding, I played a couple times. Fun fact, a good friend of ours, Brandon Fresh, he had me play flag football league one time. First game, first play, pick six, they called it back. I was livid. I got a pick six on the first play and I was so mad. Whatever, that's okay. Moving on.
Yep,
moving on to another Steelers news.
Staying in punter news, though, so after this happened, as far as those moves, the Steelers did go out and sign punter Corliss Waitman off of the New England Patriots practice squad.
Good.
He was signed to our 53-man roster, which does mean that he will remain on the active roster for the final 3 weeks of the regular season, because if you steal somebody off of someone else's practice squad, you're required to do so. So there is no taking him off of it, which does mean Pittsburgh should most likely go into the offseason with both Corliss Waitman and Presley Harvin III on the roster, which I like personally.
And that makes me believe even more that they're going to let Presley Harvin take the rest of the year off. Personally, I think that's the move.
You've got the option to do it. I would say there's no point in rushing the young man back. If he comes to you and says, hey, I really want to play, okay, let him play.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I wouldn't rush it. No. I wouldn't rush it. If he needs time, if he's still down in the dumps, which would be 100% understandable if he was, like, let him sit. Let him sit. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. So after signing him, Corliss Waitman, if the name sounds familiar, he was on the team this offseason up until the draft. So when the Steelers drafted Presley Harvin III, Corliss Waitman was the odd man out who got released. The Steelers also signed punter Cameron Nizalek to the practice squad and elevated him for Sunday's game. So that gave them two punters eligible on the day. And Carlos Waitman also does have experience as a place kicker. So you had a backup place kicker in addition to a backup punter. That way, if anybody hit COVID, you're good to go. You still got another guy there that can go out there and swing that leg around, right?
Yeah, because we've seen what happens without Boswell, and it's not pretty.
You know, it's ugly. It's absolutely ugly. Yeah.
Yeah.
J.C. Hassenhauer
was activated from the IR, which was big news. And he did. Yeah. It was bigger news than we even realized, because he would go ahead and have a role to play, very small role, but a role to play in this game after supposed injuries happened. Supposed injuries.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get there.
There's some air quotes for a reason there, my friends.
Yep. And then the team also elevated Rashard Coward, Trey Edmonds, who some players may not have known he was still on the practice squad, and also the new guy.
Offensive line, or outside linebacker, John Simon.
Heck yeah.
Kind of an NFL journeyman, but we were talking about it. We wondered if he'd get protected. He did get protected, just as we kind of suspected and hinted at in our pregame show last week. We said maybe John Simon, since he was protected, would be a guy that they would call up on game day, being short two bodies in the middle linebacker room. That's exactly what happened. Yep. So John got some playing time in this game, which, why not? You know, in the whole theory of leaving no stone unturned, let's let some more guys play and see if somebody can make some plays.
Yeah, see if you don't get a spark somewhere. Also, wide receiver Steven Sims was on the practice squad, placed on the COVID-19 list. So he went down. No chance of him being activated or upgraded for the game. But now it's time for game talk.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to try to get through this in an efficient manner, because jiffy. Honestly, it's just going to not make anyone want to listen if we talk about this one too much. So obviously, most of you, I'm sure, watched the game, or at least by now know the result of it. An ugly 36-10 loss, with that only touchdown coming late in garbage time. A lot of real bad miscues. Some pretty awful play calling at very key times as well. I would say this was probably the worst performance we've seen yet from rookie center Kendrick Green, yep. Which is just depressing. You know, you were hoping that he'd start to get to put it together and maybe even look a little better as the season went along. And instead, he seems to be regressing as the season's going on. I don't know if maybe he hit that dreaded rookie wall that they always talk about, where, you know, they don't, after that last year of college football, they don't get a break.
Yeah,
there's no break. They go straight into training for the combine, then straight from the combine into getting drafted and into rookie minicamp, and then into the full-blown camp, and then it's the preseason and regular season, and they never get any time, and their bodies just start to break down. Hopefully that's all that is with Kendrick Green. I don't think there's too many people who think that's all it is right now, though. Unfortunately, it looks like he's just not cut out for this. Which is awful, because he was a third round pick.
Yep. Very awful. You could have gone
so many different ways.
So many different ways. And people talked about Creed Humphrey this entire game, and especially after it, because Creed Humphrey was available for us in the first, and we chose to draft Najee Harris, which, again, I don't think is necessarily a bad draft pick. I do, when I look at it, in the same way that we know he's not going to get a second contract. When James talks about the fact that this guy is a one contract and done, I think that is a horrible investment when you compare it to the investment of a Creed Humphrey. Creed Humphrey's going to be an all-star center for the next
8, 10 years.
10, 12 years, probably.
Yeah.
Realistically.
And that was my biggest gripe on it. Najee, the player, is a very good player. But when you looked at a 24-year-old rookie, even if you get 5 years out of him, now you're talking 29 when his rookie deal's up. Are you going to go and give him $15, $20 million a year when he's 29 years old? Probably not, especially the way that they're overusing him right now. And as many hits as he's taking per play, a lot of times he's getting hit 5 or 6 times before he goes down. This guy isn't going to make it into his 30s.
No.
And it's no fault of his.
And it's sad, because he deserves a payday. And he's probably not really going to get one.
Yeah, he's probably never going to get one. Yep.
And, like, thinking about that, like, irritates me.
Yeah, to me, a first-round pick the expectation that I have, a first round pick needs to be a starter year one and the potential of multiple Pro Bowls. If you get two or three Pro Bowls out of a first round pick over the course of his career, you did well. If you get a guy with like five or six or more, you hit it out of the park. But I expect that out of a first round pick.
Yeah.
I also expect a second contract. So if you draft him and you already know you probably aren't going to be able to sign him to a second contract, what the hell is the point? I feel like it's a better investment with Pat Freiermuth in the second round, knowing that he was young enough that you're likely to get a second contract out of him.
And who knows? Maybe we're wrong. Maybe Pittsburgh signs Najee to a second deal. But if they do, it's not going to be any high. It's not going to be a crazy high dollar amount. Unless at 29 he is playing like he is right now, even with hopefully by then a better O-line. Maybe they give him 12 a year for two or three, maybe.
And in 5 years, 12 a year would be an insult unless you're
true.
Like not very good.
True.
that's my thing on this too, is after 5 years, the only way you're going to want to re-sign him is if he's playing really well.
Yep.
Otherwise, why are you going to want to re-sign him? You're just going to go draft some new guys and get them on those rookie deals that are cheap.
Yep.
So I think his only path to getting a second contract is by playing really, really well. And again, you're 29 years old at that point. So yep,
staying off the injury bug and not having any issues there and providing an adequate amount of play from the running back position in both run game, pass game, and blocking.
Yeah.
Or receiving, I should say. But yeah, let's move on real quick. Let's go Big Ben for a second.
Yeah. So Ben was real up and down throughout the course of the game, threw some really beautiful passes, threw some ugly ones too. And that kind of was the way the game went, really. More negative plays than good plays. Early on, that first interception, the only interception that Ben threw on the flea flicker, which is the very first offensive play. Here we go, throwing a flea flicker. Yep. And Ben gets rushed because Dan Moore was unable to hold his guy. And I don't mean actually hold him illegally, just unable to hold the block long enough. Ben rushes the throw, and by rushing it, he overthrows it. Literally the only place it could have been intercepted is if it was overthrown.
Yep.
The only place. And Rayway was open. You know, if he threw it in stride, it's a catch. If he threw it behind him or underneath him, it's a catch. If he throws it to the sideline where there's no way any defender can get there, it's a catch or an incomplete. Or even take an incomplete on that play because you get to play again.
Yep.
Overthrowing it was the only way it could be a turnover, and it was. So just got to get better results out of that. And a lot of that, to me, a lot of the bad plays that we saw from Ben on that day were a direct result of poor performance from the offensive line. The fumble later on in the game. Again, they're trying to do like this double fake handoff and then turn around and go into a screen. Kendrick Green completely whiffs on his block and gets absolutely blasted Ben before he can even turn around.
Yep.
So you gotta be able to protect him better, to give him time to throw. When you do, he makes the plays. If you don't give him any time, he's going to rush his throws, and then it's just not going to end well. And that's where it went most of the game, was not ending well.
Yep. What it comes down to with me when talking about Ben, the biggest things that I think were made very well aware in this game was Ben's lack of mobility compared to how he used to be. And even as recent as two or three years ago, Ben would shrug off a hit or you know, dodge somebody and scramble and make a crazy good play down the field. And don't get me wrong, I will give credit where credit is due. A lot of that was Antonio Brown's ability to get open and make something happen after the catch. I will give Antonio Brown that credit more than enough times. But Ben doesn't look like his pocket presence, his awareness of how to get it, like where the hole is, to scramble from the pocket. Now, I will say a lot of that is the fact that the offensive line is absolute trash right now.
They're bad.
They're bad, bad. Like, arguably the worst O-line on... I think the Lions' offensive line is better. And it's not close.
Yeah, they at least have Penei Sewell.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. So, like,
they got a first round pick on their line. We haven't had a first round pick on the line. Well, I guess we had two of them last year, but yeah, they're at the end of their career.
Yep. But again, I don't know. I'm just at a loss of words for the offensive line. I'm almost at a loss of words for play calling. I think I'm probably am. But again, you can't rely on Ben to, or you can't even put Ben in a position to try and make good throws when he doesn't have the time to do it. Period.
Yeah. Yeah. And while we're on the topic of bad calls, we'll just get it out of the way. The 4th-and-1 toss to the right was one of the worst play calls of the entire year. Just an awful idea. From a schematic thing, more importantly to me, when you're drawing that up and it's 4th-and-1, you want to run behind people who are supposed to block for a living, maybe? I don't know. All the wide receiver that were on the field on that play were on the right side, and then they ran the sweep behind them. Chase Claypool got absolutely folded on the play, tripped up one of the offensive linemen who even ate it over there. You literally ended up with Shaquan McCoy, 4 and 5 defenders. And Shooks is maybe our best offensive lineman right now, but there's nobody in the league taking out 5 defenders. Sorry. So you can't scheme it up that way. You got to at least give Ben the freedom to be able to get up at the line of scrimmage, look at it, and say, the way they're lined up, this will not work, period. I'm audibling. If you don't let a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger at 39 years old audible out of a garbage call like that, you're doing him a disservice. He's going to be remembered as a guy that really didn't show us much in his final year or final years if he comes back another year. And a lot of it is because you're not letting him audible out of garbage play calls.
Yeah, I think the thing that upset me most about this, let me clarify, second most, because I think the schematic aspect of it, trying to run behind Ray McCloud, probably the smallest receiver on the team.
Also, him and Deontay are the smallest.
Yeah, it's just horrible. And then also, I'm not even going to go there. The other thing that bugged me the most about this play was Canada's reaction to it.
Like you surprised, like, it didn't work.
Yeah. You haven't been able to run that play all year. Why would you be able to do it on a 4th-and-1? I don't know. I just, and I think the funny thing is, Mike Tomlin, I think today or yesterday, was asked about how he felt about the play calling that Matt Canada was doing. And he said, I have no issues with the play calling. And you know what I said? I said, Tomlin is a good liar because there's no way.
That's why the players love him. That's why the coaches love him, is because he will have their back no matter what. He ain't throwing him under the bus. What is he going to do? Go get a new offensive coordinator with 2 games left in the season? Nope. He's going to try to show as united of a front as he possibly can with these guys and have their back as much as possible to try to get this thing turned around.
And it makes me laugh because it's funny that is who Mike Tomlin is. But there's also an aspect of me that's like, this is the same exact mentality that is keeping us in this losing state, if you ask me personally. Nobody is claiming their own responsibility for the issues that we're having. Deontay Johnson a little bit said, I think it was Deontay, was asked recently and said, we got to get in there. We got to train. We got to lift weights. We got to watch film. We got to do it. And I'm like, okay, were you not doing that this whole time? Like,
it's scary to think that that was an answer. You know what I mean? Like, that is a bare minimum requirement of an NFL player, is to watch tape and lift weights in practice hard. Like, that's a bare minimum.
And he's saying we got to do it. Well, what have you been doing this whole time? Please tell me.
Yeah. It's like somebody showing up to work, clocking in, and then going sitting down and, like, watching TV their entire shift instead of doing their job. Like, congratulations, you came to work, but you didn't do anything. Like, do your job.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's insanely frustrating, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, in my opinion, players need to call out players and coaches need to call out coaches.
Yep.
Mike Tomlin should easily say, hey, the play calling wasn't as good. He could have done it in a nice way. He didn't have to say the play calling was absolute trash like I'm saying, but he could have said, you know what, we're realizing more and more that this isn't working. And I even had a revelation recently that I mentioned to James, and it wasn't a revelation on my part. Someone else posted it in a Steelers group on Facebook, and I relayed the message to James. We keep running these short passes and these wide receiver screens because our defense can't cover it, which means that those plays probably work amazing in practice.
They look awesome in practice. You're absolutely right.
But at some point, we got to realize, hey, these aren't working in a real game.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about our corners and how our corners kind of struggle with athletic wide receivers in the open field sometimes, I bet Deontay Johnson makes them look pretty dumb. I bet Ray Ray even makes them look pretty dumb in practice on a semi-regular basis. And that's probably why they have so much faith in Ray Ray.
Yep.
It's because he probably looks awesome in practice when nobody's hitting him. And then he gets to the game and, you know, somebody blows him up. And I mean, we don't have a single corner on the team that's like a big, strong, physical dude. Hayden's probably the most physical guy. And Hayden, I don't think, weighs more than about 195.
Probably not.
So when you start going against corners that are 210 and like rocked up, of course this is going to not work well.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I think you got a real, real good point there, honestly. We're going to wrap up the quarterback section. Mason got the last drive. Did take him right down the field again. You're against the prevent defense, kind of like the only scoring drive for the Steelers as far as touchdown-wise. Ben took him down the field. They did get a touchdown. It was a real nice play by Deontay Johnson, which he was up and down in this game. He did have a fumble in this game that was very costly earlier in the game.
It was a fumble, so, untouched fumble.
Yep.
Just was literally running with the ball and dropped it.
Yep. Trying to change. The reason that he fumbled it is because he was changing what arm he was carrying the ball in from his right to his left, which was the appropriate thing to do because then you can use your right arm to stave off some defenders and try to stiff arm and prevent it from getting knocked out. It's the right thing to do, but you should be able to do that without fumbling. And he was unable to do that without fumbling on the play.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, which is a rare thing. You don't see that too often in the NFL, but it seems every couple of years we see somebody from Pittsburgh do that in the open field and really blow it.
Yep. It's a sad day. We talked about the offensive linemen a little bit. I don't have much more to say other than the fact that they played horrible. We did see Kendrick Green and both Trey Turner exit the game at the same time.
Yep.
With apparent injuries.
Got a calf injury for Kendrick Green. I didn't see him limping. Trey Turner with a knee injury. Well, he did actually have a knee injury going into the game, so it could be that he tweaked the thing a little bit. But it looked a lot more like when they brought Mason Rudolph in. They just wanted to bring in some of the other offensive linemen and try a different combination.
Yep.
And again, it was against the prevent defense. Was it successful moving the ball down the field? Absolutely it was. They went right down the field and almost scored on the final drive. Literally only ran out of time. They got it to like the 4-yard line.
Which I hate. I hate that. I understand that we put Mason Rudolph in there and people are going to be like, look what Mason did. Look what Mason did. He's doing it against a completely different defense than what Ben had all day long.
Except for Ben's last drive on which he scored.
Correct. Fair. Whatever.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it was different. And they actually used the tight ends in the last couple drives too, and they didn't use them the entire game otherwise.
They used two of them.
Well, yeah, Kevin Rader actually got a few balls thrown his way, and actually, you know, he caught them and it moved the chains a little bit. And again, with Gentry, you know, when you throw the ball to him, he lowers his shoulder and moves the pile.
Yep.
I think Mason at least showed us in this game that he has more athleticism than I think people are giving him credit for. A lot of what I've heard from folks is, you know what, let's give Dwayne Haskins a try because he's more athletic. I'm not convinced that Dwayne Haskins is more athletic than Mason Rudolph. Mason has clearly put some effort in either maintaining or improving his athleticism. And he looked quick on the scramble.
He did. I will give you that. And I even said this when James and I were rewatching highlights before the show to kind of make sure we were fresh up on what happened during the game. I think that Ben Roethlisberger is a better quarterback than Mason Rudolph. I do believe that. However, with the state of the offensive line and with the state of the Steelers' entire team currently, I think we may have won more games this year with Mason Rudolph at the helm due to his ability to scramble and extend plays the way that Ben just can't anymore. I think we might have won 2 or 3 more games this year. I definitely won't say any more than that. But I can tell you right now, I don't think we tie the Lions with Mason Rudolph in there. And that hurts me to say that. It does.
You know, Mason was the one that started that game, right?
I know.
You said you don't think that we tie the lines with Mason in there.
No, that's not what I meant. Oh my gosh. I meant.
Do you mean that we would have beat them?
I think that we would have beat them with Ben. I think that we only tied them because Mason was playing. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Mason had a subpar game that game, and we came to the same conclusion on that Mason was not tremendous in that game.
No, because that was the game Mason's that proved to me that he's not. We've seen what he has.
Yeah.
Yeah. My bad. I said that wrong.
Yeah. When you were done with your statement, I was like, this doesn't sound like where you were going with this. I'm going to be honest. Not. It kind of sounded like you were saying
But that's what I'm saying is the Detroit Lions game is the only game that I think that we didn't win that we would have won with Ben in.
Yeah.
But every other game that I think we lost, we may have had a better chance. Maybe not all of them. But some of them we may have had a better chance with Mason in just due to the ability to scramble.
Yeah, and I feel like it's almost like you just have to almost gauge it early in the game. Is the line blocking today or not? Yeah. If the answer is no, then you might as well just put Mason in and leave him in the rest of the game. If they look like they're even adequate, well, then leave Ben in and you'll probably be okay. Ben will probably put a good game together if they're adequate. But if they're subpar, then just pull him before he gets hurt and let Mason run the show and let's see if he can move it with some scrambling ability.
You never know. We talked about Najee. Najee Harris had a great game in the sense of number-wise to a degree. He did break the rookie record for most yards from scrimmage for a Pittsburgh Steeler. He broke Le'Veon Bell's record before we got to any extra games to be added. I think that's important to note. He did it within the realm of the same number of games that Le'Veon Bell had. So,
also, he broke the Steelers rookie receiving record for most receptions in a season that was just set last year by Chase Claypool. So he has more catches than Chase had last year, in addition to almost being at 1,000 yards rushing now. Yeah. So He'll get there. If he has decent games in the next two games, break the Steelers rookie rushing record for most yardage in a season. But Franco Harris did that in 14 games. Najee will have done it in 17.
Yeah.
So it's still a little more impressive on Franco's performance. But at least, you know, it's trending upwards. They got the running game going a little bit again, which is an important part of getting the entire offense going. If they could have got the passing game going and not turned the ball over so many times, then we would have seen a decent game. But the turnovers absolutely killed Pittsburgh in this game.
Oh, easily.
Just briefly, I don't think there's any point in talking to any other running backs. A little bit of Benny Snell action. He looked okay, at least. He didn't look bad.
Yeah.
We got wide receivers. It was all over the place. Deontay with a bipolar game, to call it the most blatant thing, really. Dropping the ball while you're carrying it. And then late in the game, getting a touchdown on a real nice play, cutting and making somebody miss. He was just so hot and cold throughout the game. And it's games like that that make me look at it and say, you know what, he wasn't ready to go to the Pro Bowl. Like, he wasn't ready to be voted in. He just isn't at that level yet.
Nope. But when he gets to that level, he's going to be amazing.
He's getting closer every year. We have to at least look at it that way and say, you know what, last year we're talking about, do you even want this guy on the team? Because he had like 16, 17 drops, something like that over the course of the year. This year, he mostly cleaned that up. He's had a few more drops later in the year. But still, we're going to be single digits at the end of the year, which is much better. He's got over 1,000 yards receiving. He has, what, like 6 or 7 touchdown catches on the year?
I think he has 8 now.
He has 8 now. So, I mean, he's putting together good numbers on the season. So if he's able to continue on that trend, we are trending towards a guy that could be a Pro Bowl receiver next year. If he's able to build off of what he did this year into next year and increase things a little bit more, just a little more every year, you are talking about a Pro Bowl receiver next year. But consistency is going to be one of the most important things with him. We do need to see better consistency out of him.
Absolutely. I can't agree with you more. Other than that, wide receivers, the only thing that I have to say, Chase Claypool had another hot and cold game, I think. Very, very cold blocking. He caught two nice balls that Ben threw. One could have been technically flagged for offensive pass interference, but it wasn't. The only complaint I have around the wide receiver room is the fact that what's his name? Cody White.
He's Claypool?
No, Cody White. Cody White went in there for the one couple plays, and the one play was a run to the right where he happened to be the slot on the right-hand side. And the lack of effort on the blocking just irritated the living daylights out of me. I don't know if you remember that play or not.
I absolutely do, yeah. And the effort wasn't there, man. Like, he missed his block out of the gate, and then it's like he didn't even bother to go. I mean, like, it happens. Sometimes you don't get your block. Move on to the next guy, or at least continue pursuing so the ball carrier can cut back. You know, if you chase after him, the ball carrier can see that, cut back in behind you, and then still keep on going and make a play out of it. But if you don't even pursue, it's like, what are you doing, man? So some plays out of Cody White, but nothing spectacular. He looks to be just that barely rosterable guy that we knew him to be, you know? James Washington, I've seen a little bit of this on social media today, and I'm going to jump onto the trend. I'm sorry. This team has not used you enough. You're better than what Pittsburgh has used you for. And this game was a classic example. Why in the world is Cody White getting more snaps than James Washington? He's a good receiver. I'm not going to go out there and be like, oh, James Washington's amazing. Like, he's the best ever. He's a fantastic number two. I'm not going to say any of that. But he is way better than what Pittsburgh is allowing him to be and giving him the opportunity to be. And he's a better blocker than all three of those other wide receivers.
Combined.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing that frustrates me is I think that Pittsburgh thinks that they are going to sign him for another deal cheap.
He will be interested in, he's going to be interested in 31 teams next year. And the only one he won't want to go to is Pittsburgh. Yeah. He won't come here to vacation. He won't come here for a wedding. He won't come here for a funeral. He will leave this town and never come back.
Nope. He won't come back at all. And I'm livid.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him one bit.
Pittsburgh did this to him. You could still have used him and him have gotten 3 or 4 touchdowns this year and him still been affordable. In my opinion. I don't know.
What's the worst case scenario on this? Use the better player. If you don't end up being able to re-sign him, somebody else pays him and it helps our compensatory formula. It's win-win if you play the guy. By not playing him,
it's lose-lose.
Nobody's going to pay him and he's not going to want to come back here. Congratulations. You did everything negative for the whole long-term, short-term, everything. Yep. We will gain nothing out of that.
Sad.
It could have been somebody that somebody gave like $8 or $10 million to be their number two wide receiver. Nobody's going to give him that kind of money now. He hasn't played. If you can't get on the roster with our roster, four or five,
probably because they understand that he's talented, but it's not, it's going to be a 1 or 2 year deal. It's not gonna be anything crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to have to sign a 1 year prove it deal. That's what it's going to be. But I honestly kind of doubt anybody's even going to give him the chance to be a number one or two minus injuries. His best bet is to go somewhere where he can be the three and one of the top guys gets injured because then he'll get a bunch of playing time.
Don't be surprised if he ends up in freaking Cincinnati. That's what I'd do.
You can't tell me that Belichick wouldn't want a guy like that that's dependable and blocks.
True. But either way, if he goes to either of those teams, he's going further than Pittsburgh is in the near future. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. Unless we fix the offensive line, the quarterback room and the cornerback room all this year and the inside linebacker room, both of those team Bengals and Patriots are going to go farther than what we're doing.
Yep.
They got their stuff together. They got offensive linemen. They got corners. They got a quarterback, young rookie. Well, one was the rookie last year. One's a rookie this year. I don't know what more to say about that. Tight ends. We talked about them already. We don't have to go into more with tight ends.
Nothing spectacular. They weren't really used. They caught the ball when it was thrown to them. Yeah.
Moving on to the defensive side of the ball.
Let's just start with the line and make it easy. We have one good player on the defensive line. His name's Cameron Hayward.
That's it.
The rest of them are not good.
Good show.
I really don't even have to go any further into it.
You don't.
It really hurt not having Chris Wormley in this game. We saw a couple plays where Montrevious Adams got some penetration, but he never got the tackle, so it didn't help. It just left a big hole behind him because no one was ever there to have his back.
Yep.
Unfortunately, probably the worst game Mondo's had all season. He kept on getting double-teamed and driven backwards. Even Loudermilk was getting driven backwards. Although Loudermilk did have a lot of tackles in this game and did get the start in this game. So it does show that they're appreciating his progression of what he's done through the season. But it's very obvious when you watch a game like this that Loudermilk just needs a couple of years to be in that weight room and really bulk up. I don't think he needs to physically get a lot bigger, but he definitely needs to get stronger and maybe learn a little bit more in the line of technique on how to hold up to a double team too, which Cam Hayward will teach him.
Yeah.
If he can't get taught that by the defensive line coach, he will get taught that by Cam Hayward.
Absolutely.
So yeah, but past that, it was not a great performance from the defensive line. At least it wasn't a 200-yard rushing performance by the Chiefs, but they still got like 120.
Yeah.
So it's still not great.
Linebacking core, all of them. I don't even care outside, inside. TJ Watt got they schemed very well for TJ Watt. There were times where TJ Watt would beat his man and the guard or somebody running back, whoever would come over and just give him a one hit and just make sure that the tackle had him had him in front of him again.
Yep.
Very, very well played.
Yeah. And honestly, that's just a sign of a good unit. They work well together as a group. And they didn't leave each other out to dry. That's why Pittsburgh only got the Mahomes twice. You know, Cam Hayward had a sack, and that was one where Mahomes actually ran forward and kind of ran almost into it. And then we had one from Alex Highsmith.
Yep.
And that was it. You know, we didn't get to him otherwise. And we knew that we had to get more pressure on Patrick Mahomes to have any chance. So it just wasn't enough pressure. It wasn't enough times getting to him. And it started mostly with the interior pass rush. You can tell TJ wasn't 100% multiple times in the game. You saw him grabbing his ribs. He's got apparently 3 cracked ribs right now that he's playing with, which you're just never going to be 100% on that. It takes at least a month for broken ribs to heal up.
And here's the thing. I understand everyone's desire to make it to the playoffs this year. I would prefer not making it to the playoffs. Unpopular opinion, maybe. I would prefer not making it to the playoffs and keeping a healthy TJ Watt than having him break a rib or something and have to go into the offseason dealing with an injury and having to nurse that. Because broken ribs almost never heal back to 100%. It's typically when you get a broken rib, you'll have another broken rib by the time their career's done. That's just how it goes, because for whatever reason, players don't allow that to heal well, at least in the few examples that I can think of. But
okay, yeah, I hadn't heard that before, but that's interesting to know.
I can't remember his name. I'll look it up and I'll post the link to it. But there was a specific player that we actually talked about in school that didn't allow his broken ribs to heal properly, kept playing with them. Whether they were cracked or broken, I actually can't remember now, but it led to a
same. A crack is just a small fracture, not a complete fracture,
but
so
led to a,
it's just the severity,
longer injury. Basically.
And we saw that the 1 year with Rob Gronkowski, right? He was playing with a break in his forearm,
yep.
And then ended up breaking it more severely and then missing the rest of the year because of it. So you got to be careful. I know you can't really put your ribs in a cast. It doesn't work that way. But maybe if he isn't wearing one yet, he ought to be wearing a flak jacket like the quarterbacks do to protect it a little bit.
Yeah.
Cause you did see a couple times during this game where the offensive lineman would like take a little jab and like intentionally give him a shot to the ribs, knowing that it hurts him, knowing that he wouldn't be able to effectively pass rush. And you know what? There's nothing illegal about it. Now that teams know that he's got cracked ribs, technically you can block somebody by hitting him in the ribs. You know, there's absolutely nothing illegal about that. So people are going to continue doing it.
Yeah. Very interested to see how the Browns and the Ravens handle us moving forward in the next 2 games for sure. If he continues to play, to be clear.
Yeah, let's talk off ball linebackers and get off the outside guys.
I don't want to.
All right, well,
I know we have to. I just don't want to.
We at least saw some big hits out of Robert Spillane. We also saw some big misses out of Robert Spillane. The most notable one would be when Robert Spillane hit Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the backfield in the goal line situation, hit him very hard, but then got literally tackled by Alex Highsmith, who had just been blocked in the back by Miles Killebrew. Yes, these are all Steelers.
Yep.
Blocking each other in the back and tackling each other and
if
preventing.
That doesn't sum up the year. I don't know what does.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really just a ridiculous series of events on the one play. You had Spillane finally showing us that someone is willing to come and go right through a hole and smack a running back, and then it just completely self-destructing. Past that, I didn't really feel like there was a lot going on. We did see a little bit of Ulysses Gilbert III in this game. I didn't see anything significant out of him. No. But it was only those three middle linebackers, Schobert, Spillane, Ulysses Gilbert III. The other three were all out. So nothing too significant there. Again, no big plays. The potential was there, but unfortunately did not go the way we wanted it to. Secondary, the corners kind of got abused all game long. They didn't give up the deep balls, but we talked about it
before the show. That our guys are not fast enough to keep up with that receiver corps, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have to beat us deep because they're so agile and quick that they could run a 10-yard in or a slant or even a hook, and they're wide the heck open.
And that was part of what I think was so effective for them is our corners knew they couldn't hang with them speed wise. So they stayed back. They played soft coverage because they knew they had to or they'd get beat deep.
Yep.
So Kansas City just took what we gave them all game long, which was underneath and short stuff. And then they used the acceleration, the agility, and the short area quickness of these wide receivers, which all of them have on their team, to make plays.
Yep.
So the lack of athleticism at the cornerback position dictated the entire game really there.
I would even argue that a lack of athleticism or even the football IQ of the interior and out and exterior linebackers led to some of that too. There were a couple of these times where we were playing a zone and the linebackers weren't far enough back or weren't far enough to the side in the flats and in the zone areas to where you're not covering up a passing lane. You're not getting in front of the ball. You're not getting in front of the receiver. And we just did that time and time and time again. And it hurt to watch. It really did. To the point that I'm going to be honest, I stopped watching midway through this game. I got caught up a little bit and watched the highlights and this and that. And I had the game on. I just wasn't actively paying attention to it because it wasn't enjoyable. And it sucked. And it's frustrating. And as a fan, it hurts to watch. I'll keep it on and I'll hope for a comeback. But the play calling mixed with the execution, mixed with just the personnel. We don't have the personnel to keep up with a team like that. It hurts to watch. It sucks.
And that's what we talked about pregame too, right? We were really concerned about our personnel not being able to handle their receivers. And that was when we thought Tyreek Hill wasn't going to make the game.
Yeah.
And then he makes the game and it's even more difficult.
Could you imagine actually helped Tyreek Hill,
but oh, it would have been so ugly.
Oh my God.
They would have probably scored 50 points. Yeah. But yeah, the saving grace in the game was again, Minkah Fitzpatrick almost had an interception at 12 tackles in the game. This is 26 tackles in 2 weeks. He now has well over 100 tackles on the season and is on his way to being one of the highest single season tackles by a safety in NFL history, which is awful. That means your linebackers are not doing their job. That should always be your middle linebackers that are leading the team in tackles. When it's your safeties that are leading the team and are actually close to the league leading with tackles, that means that everybody in front of them is betraying them. Yep. Everyone.
Yep.
I mean, not Cam and TJ, but basically everyone else.
I don't know what more you can say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, special teams, just to cover it real quick. Corliss Waitman had two punts. They were tremendous. The second one did go into the end zone, but you're talking 60-plus yard punts on both of them. So at least the kid showed up, had a real nice performance as far as his leg strength and consistency when striking the ball.
Yeah.
Boswell, missed the one field goal.
Yep. Made the other field goal.
And then the first one, it was a blown call anyway because the long snapper was being held down while somebody else jumped over him. Completely illegal. gets called on everybody else, but when it's against Pittsburgh, then it's legal somehow.
There were
somehow.
A lot of plays that didn't, or flags that didn't get called this game that I just wasn't even going to bring up. That the Joe Haden holding one, the blatant calls that were just missed. But that is nowhere near why we lost the game. So it's not even worth bringing up, if I'm being honest.
Yeah,
that's where it's at.
Yeah, nothing spectacular in the return game or the coverage game or any of that.
Nope.
So
just an average, below average game.
Yeah, when the best thing you can say about any position group is that the new punter did well, he had a bad game.
Yeah. But so that's going to do it for this episode. Reminder for you guys. Actually, no, we have a couple things. We have a couple after the game.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about still, unfortunately.
Excuse me. I thought part of me is like, hey, we're going to talk about this at the beginning of the next show. But I was like, no, we're going to do it now.
Yep. We got some brief notes. This is just stuff that happened after the game to catch you guys up. Some transactions, some injury notes, that sort of thing.
Yep. So Kendrick Green and Trey Turner with the injuries. Nothing crazy there. We don't have any details on those. I think one of the arguably the biggest news, our offensive line coach, Adrian Clem, took a job at Oregon, where he is the offensive line coach, the run game coordinator, and the assistant head coach. All those things. And so he's no longer with the team.
Yeah.
With two games left.
And this is a lot of people are trying to paint this as he took a lateral move to go to the college game. This is not a lateral move by any means.
Nope.
Is he an offensive line coach there? Yes. But being the running game coordinator and an assistant head coach is actually a major promotion from what he was with Pittsburgh, which is why he was in such a hurry to go, which is why Mike Tomlin said, go ahead, man, I'm not going to hold you back. Everybody that's an assistant coach wants to be a head coach at one point in time, and getting that label assistant head coach is a significant thing for Coach Clem's career. I don't know why anybody wanted to promote him off of what our offensive line did this year, but hey, good luck to him. That means our assistant offensive line coach, Chris Morgan, is taking over for the remainder of the season, whether it be two games or anything into the playoffs. He will be the one running the show now. So we'll see if there's anything different, if he decides to maybe start somebody who's been sitting on the bench or anything like that.
Yeah, I will say this too. I saw somebody post in a Steelers group because they're just uninformed. The post read, wake up or whatever, like attention, whatever. He was fired and they allowed him to leave in good terms. No, he was not fired. He got a promotion and went to go do that. And he probably has, James mentioned this prior to recording, he probably has some kind of say or whatever in recruitment, and that's all going on right now. So he's going to be busy. Again, sucks and kind of a low blow for us to lose our offensive line coordinator or offensive line coach as our offensive line is playing so horribly. But it is what it is. What are you going to do?
Yeah, honestly, most people are looking at it and saying, you know what, I'm not going to miss him. I'm not in that group. I feel like he was very frustrated with the performance of this unit and could have possibly helped them if given some more time and some better talent. But whatever. Good luck to you, young man.
Shots fired.
Yesterday in the news, wide receiver Anthony Miller was added to the COVID list from our practice squad. Also, Carl Joseph was put on the COVID list from our practice squad. Oof. So a couple more guys going on. With them going on the list, they did sign today, this being Tuesday, of course, wide receiver Damian Willis to the practice squad. Malcolm Pridgden, who was previously on the practice squad, went onto the COVID list, came back off of the COVID list today. So he's cleared and ready to go for future games, which they then released guard Nate Gilliam, who we just re-signed last week to replace Malcolm Pridgden. So that gets you all caught up in the transactions post-game and where we're at right now. So we'll get you up to date on what's going on. The protected players will probably be released tomorrow. And then we'll let you know. Hopefully we'll get Pat Freiermuth and Kevin Dotson back. If we get both of them back for this game, I think there's a decent chance. I think there's a chance of things going well. Maybe some run game and some passing game coming back to life. And we at least know that we did at least the same Pittsburgh Steelers franchise. I'm not saying the same team. Beat the Cleveland Browns earlier this season. So there should be some hope going into this game.
That's fair. So yeah, keep an eye open for any updates and stuff on our social media, all that stuff. We try to keep you guys updated with those. Next episode will be coming out midday Friday, more than likely, as long as everything goes well. But we will figure that out. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, ring the bell to get notifications. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.